Welcome to another episode of Tech Bites, brought to you by The Gateway.
Amin Biagio, thank you for being here as always. And I want to jump right in because I think this last week, the entire world has dealt with a lot of different things within technology, and some of the fears or some of the weaknesses within our structures have been highlighted based on the Microsoft outages through CrowdStrike and all of those great experiences. But before we go into that stuff, I mean, can you give just a high level reference of what actually happened for those that might not have taken the time to read some articles and really understand or interpret what we experienced this last week?
Sure. Well, we experienced an outage of Microsoft Windows systems, primarily systems that were owned by businesses. But the way it works is, so there's this young company, CrowdStrike, that had really innovative ideas. It was founded, I think, in 2012 or 2013. Got really involved in high-profile cybersecurity investigation cases, such as ransomware instances and stuff with government. So it built up a lot of reputability, credibility, and reputation. And so its business grew fast when it offered cybersecurity products and solutions. And it bundled very well with Microsoft products, which are dominant in business market. And the short story is they basically held a huge market share in cybersecurity solutions for systems run by companies, such as airlines, universities. NIU was affected. My personal Windows laptop, not work laptop, by NIU was affected. There's another culture that has emerged in the last 5 years in the industry, and that is you are expected to send updates every month. And I understand why that's good. It's good because the idea is you always should work to find vulnerabilities and patch them as you go. That's like a work you should never stop doing as a cybersecurity company. So there's this pressure on cybersecurity companies to every month send an update. You might have noticed Apple, smartphone companies even send security updates every month. So, when there's pressure, there's mistakes. So for this month, that means also 1 month is a short window to do testing. So in this 1 month, they need to not only find vulnerabilities that they haven't seen before, they need to create software that goes in, modifies their existing software, and replaces it with a better working one. And they need to test it before they send it out. So I think it's not unlikely that mistakes occur. And software being such a complicated product, I have seen claims that software is the most complicated thing we've ever made, humans ever made. And I see why people think that. No, being familiar with the technology from hardware all the way to programming languages, it is not hard to see why people claim that it is the most complicated thing. And imagine there's hundreds of lines, hundreds of thousands, or maybe millions of lines of code. And if one character is wrong, something's going to go wrong. And do we have instances where there are mistakes? Yes. But the catch here is when there's a mistake, we don't know what it will do. Sometimes it fails to start a service and you get a message that some service didn't start, and then they send a repair, they didn't send a fix to that, and a fix is done. Sometimes it can be something that turns the computer off and it doesn't turn on, like this case. And there's no way to know because we don't know there's a mistake. And when the computer doesn't turn on, you can't fix it remotely. Then you need hands on the keyboard, which is how this can be fixed. And that's what happened. They sent an update. It changed one of the files that code inside one of the files that was necessary for Windows booting up. And then there was a mistake, and the mistake was in there, and the Windows didn't boot up, and they couldn't fix it remotely. They sent the fix like I think less than an hour, but it was already, computers were affected and weren't turning on to receive it. So
So, I mean, as we're talking about all of that stuff, is I'm not quite sure we all understood how fragile that system really is, like with the amount of code that we have and the amount of lines and how quickly. So are we, I think we all have an understanding of our physical infrastructure, and when it might not be at its best, when a bridge collapses, God forbid, it makes the news as it should because it's tragic, it's scary, it's visceral, it's in our faces. But when it's something like a technological infrastructure or even our power lines and our water pipes, when they're hidden, we don't really see it and we just kind of move forward. But we as a modern society have really relied significantly on technology and to be able to do this stuff. But massive elements of our society were shut down because we couldn't turn computers on. So is there a way to fix it? Is it just saying, all right, everyone take a lot longer to out push these updates, or do we need to just be ready for it and know that, yeah, we could just lose our technology if one person has a bad day of coding or a bad line of coding or just a simple, typing input mistake?
Russ, can I add on something I think is
Oh,
related to
yeah.
this before I mean goes for it. Make it is I think it's also like the other aspect of it is with the physical like stuff that you can see and kind of control. Like we over time we have developed drills, right? So if the
Right.
radar say that there can be like a tornado coming, right? They tell you a tornado warning, and then if there is a tornado watch, people know exactly what to do.
Yeah.
But this wasn't the case, right? So when software is the problem, should we, thinking about developing those drills, or are people thinking about it? And I mean, I'm pretty sure in the future we will have guests that are experts of cybersecurity and digital. Digitalization and stuff like that, just to talk more about this. But to me, that was the striking difference is that it's, I mean, everything stopped and there was not much that we could have done.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll pass it to Amin, but that to me was related to what you were saying.
I think that is part of the response. So, what I would say to that question is no, we can't prevent mistakes. We can't prevent outages. We can't, but we can mitigate it. And that's what we should do. And we should have contingency plans, like Biagio said. We have contingency plans for natural disaster. When they happen, we know, like, so we should have, like, and I saw some airlines did. I saw pictures of people were, very surprised. People received handwritten boarding passes in some airports. So these are airlines that did have a contingency plan, probably not a good one if they're handwriting there. Boarding passes, but they could have like old systems and not thrown away old systems that are like in a fully functional state and freeze them like that. And you can fire it up when your new systems is not working. And you they can keep them with lower capacities so that they do work with less pace. So there's lots of mitigation tactics we can use to deal with this and make it much, much less costly. I'm seeing numbers, estimates. Of course, these are not final or not, I'm not even sure how correct they are, but I'm seeing like estimates near $1 trillion mark.
Wow.
And airline passengers, hospital patients, us people who work for these are gonna, they're gonna pay for it, and some insurance companies. And we know insurance companies always make money, they never pay anything. So when insurance companies pay for something, we know that we are gonna pay it eventually to them. So society ends up paying for it. So it has to there has to be a way to mitigate this, and there are lots of ways to mitigate this. And this one seems like a stupid mistake based on what I'm reading. There is no investigation yet, But I'm sure there will be government involvement in asking questions. And when government is involved, there's some level of transparency that we can count on. So I'm waiting for that, but it doesn't seem like a complicated thing that happened. Even if they fixed it in half an hour, it couldn't have been that complicated. It should have been a stupid mistake.
Well, then my next question is, if we spread the amount of clients or customers of CrowdStrike out, this could have been one of the ways to mitigate it. So instead of Microsoft being solely interwoven with CrowdStrike, and it was something maybe more that the consumer was able to elect and select from a bunch of different security-based softwares, it would have only been a smaller portion of it. But when all of the companies, all of these large elements are using the exact same company, it only amplified that. So is that something we should be looking at within, I'm going to use the term, mitigation of monopolies in the software space, but that's something that's been a part of the tech landscape from its foundation. I mean, even today, you can kind of say there's, maybe one or two active operating systems for cell phones. We know them. It's Android and iOS. Like, same thing with computers. There's not a lot out there. So how do we, should we be working on spreading that out as again, a technological society, I guess.
Yes, so of course, we love capitalism because of competition. And it's not like we like capital. We don't like capital. We like the things that competition does to our brains. And we should, it's not like we need to protect capital. We need to protect competition. Competition is the only thing that brings us benefits from a market economy. And that's true about software, but it's very hard, I think, with it's harder compared to other industries, in my opinion, because the market for software is global and within reach, the same for everyone. It's not like you have, for example, running a retail business, like a brick and mortar retail business, a pharmacy that you need to go pick up your, or a doctor's, let's say. Whatever I'm thinking, there's an online version of it. So a lawn care business, it's highly local. You know what I mean? Landscaping business, highly local, but every business online is not local anymore. So if one option is better than the others, which is always going to be, one option is always going to be better because someone figured it out better. Everyone's going to buy from them and they're quickly going to turn into a monopoly. And that keeps happening. With all the tech stuff, like new thing shows up and no one buys the other thing, the old thing. And once the and then there are companies that are actively pushing monopolization because, of course, they want more money. That's what they would do. And one of them is, of course, Microsoft. It has a lot of in several areas it has monopolies. But I'm glad you brought and people might ask, well, what do? We are stuck with Windows. I would say we are not stuck with Windows. We are stuck with Windows application standards, meaning people, we have to have like a platform on which a shared platform, an agreed upon platform on which different companies develop applications. And it doesn't have to be tightly controlled by a company, but Windows is. And there are really good examples of platforms that are open, like Linux is an open platform and Android is an open platform, as you, I'm glad you brought that up. This is, for example, Android, Google has their own version and everyone else can build whatever version of Android they want. And then Android as like an application development platform, people can develop applications that will work on all Android or on all Linux systems. But the platform for Windows is entirely closed and only accessible to Windows, meaning the operating system, the platform that is hosting these applications is just one. Just that one, and it has one set of vulnerabilities. There's no redundancy built into the plan. If there's an application that caused it to crash, all of it will crash. But imagine if Windows was open and then there was a company in Texas and there was a company in Tokyo that had their own Windows version, call it like Doors or whatever they wanted to call it. Then they wouldn't crash. Only Microsoft's would crash. You know what I mean? So I think
Right.
it's true that we need shared standards so that we are more efficient, but we don't have to sacrifice competition for that. There are ways, and maybe we have done it before.
If I can jump into this, I think like when we talk about like software like monopoly and stuff like that, I think the other aspect is the fact that the big tech giants make it very difficult for other companies to stand up and even like running trying to run independently without merging to them. It's just like you're doing things right. You have a nice company that is doing, I don't know, cybersecurity or whatever it is, and then you get a check of millions or billions for from Meta or Google or Apple or Microsoft, and it's hard to say no, right? So
Yes,
it's
I would
very
have said
difficult
no.
to then. Well, actually, I'm bringing this up because it's a recent news, the fact that a cybersecurity company called Weeds
Yes, yes,
actually refused 23 billion from Google. So I wanted to applaud them from the fact of saying, hey, I don't want to be I don't want to get a paycheck in the short term. I'm trying to get a bigger one in the long term. But it's not that common. If we look at how many acquisition of really great company those big giants have done in the past years, it shows how, I mean, in the end of the day, it's always the usual three or four company that they're keeping all the shares, right? If I can make also another consideration, which is partially related to this, like when I was still in Italy doing my undergrads and my master, I remember my professor keep telling me about this sentence, software is eating the world. And it was a Marc Andreessen quote, and that was from 2011. And I still use in some of my classes, right? Just to show them how important, IS and technology is in general, but how much like the software component is really like taking the market cap, the best, the highest market cap companies, majority of them are software companies as well. It's also like to me, when something like this happened, it make me reflect on how if something happened on the software side, the world can truly stop, right? And it did stop for for many important sector in our daily life, and also at the same time thinking how I don't know 30, 40 years ago it wasn't like that, and we were li living in a completely different world, and it wouldn't stop if something like that happened. I don't know, it just like make you think about how much we are relying on software, how much we rely on the internet, and if something happened to this, we are not ready for moving on unless it's an easy fix of 30 minutes like you were saying. But that 30 minutes cost a lot of delay for people and a lot of impacts that I'm pretty sure people that are in this sector will study and research more. But it's to me is really like a point of reflection and say, hey, we could do this stuff 40 years ago and now we don't, right? If something happened to this, we are completely stuck, or more stuck than we would have been 40 years ago.
I
Well,
agree
then
100%.
I think you're right too. And the scary part or the concerning part is I think we're stepping more and more into that environment of relying on these softwares to do more essential and more important elements, of what we're going with. So I fear that as we step into AI and having that make decisions for us, if you branch out 200 years from now, and we potentially, in the worst case scenario, have AI making almost all of our decisions, and we're all just hanging out and having a great time, and that goes down, and we haven't done simple math. Now we're all in a very difficult situation because there's only a couple of people that legitimately know how to do, you know, some multiplication or things like that. Because think about, I mean, I don't know how to farm, right? Like I know I have some colleagues that do, and I'm impressed by it, but I could not in any way go and supply my own food. But Biagio, like you said, I mean, even 80 years ago, that would have been something that was a much more part of our society. So I know when I say things like, oh, people might not, you know how to do math as well. Well, we're walking into that environment very quickly. And we've seen it even just with calculators in the classroom and having access to that stuff. So how do we prioritize what is still essential in our world, in our experiences? Well, we're giving more and more of that stuff to our softwares, to our systems.
Actually, Russ, this is exactly where I was going, because if in 30 years we got to this point with the advances in technology that are coming, and they already came, like you were mentioning, AI and I don't know, self-driving cars, all this stuff that are coming up, we will start to rely more and more on technologies, and we will keep on doing less and less things. I sometimes I get questioned by the students and say, hey, why do we need to learn how to code if, you know, ChatGPT can do it in a faster way, right? But what if something happened to the ChatGPT server and you need that code to, you know, something that is really critical for society, then you don't know how to do it, right? So we are stuck. We're going to be even more stuck, and we are not going to even be able to perform tasks like, I don't know, I'm saying like self-driving cars in the future might completely replace taxi or even our cars, right? What do we do in that case? We start walking, and I mean, it's going to be tough. And I'm not sure I have an answer for that, but I think that the your point of the delegating more and more tasks to technology because it's more capable, right? It's starting to get conversational for many tasks, and it's very easy for everybody to use compared to what it was before, right? It's not anymore a niche. Everybody's using a computer. Some people, you know, my son plays with my Apple Watch and seems to be doing stuff better than me, and I just couldn't explain. but still, the point is we are delegating this. And as Russ said, we are missing, I mean, we are not learning anymore how to do some stuff that if something happened to I don't know, the software, the digital world, the internet, then it's going to be difficult to replace the technology, to replace the software, to replace the internet, because we are too much used to it, because we are not learning how to do it anymore. And so this is a big trade-off. It sure creates efficiency. It sure is effective. But do we still need to have a backup plan? Do we still, as a society, especially for tasks that are relevant for our daily life, do we still need to somehow invest in people learning them? Because you know, we never know what's going to happen. And this was a demonstration of it.
Well, my question is, how can we motivate people to still learn skills that, you know, technology is taking over? For example, I wasn't worried about farming. Now I am, but I wasn't worried about farming. I wasn't worried about construction, all of these, even all of these, if they are automated. For example, we can figure it out how to build a roof over our heads, right?
Right,
You
right.
can. I mean, I can. But you have more
I
time.
think everyone will find a way. That's how all, but things like writing, you know what I mean? Writing is being
Yeah.
replaced by machines, and that's like a new level. I'm concerned about other technologies too, but this one is like a new level of concern for me, because language is such a unique human ability, and there's a risk that we will develop it less. Or sometime in the future, we will stop developing it because it will just be conversational. And when we want to write like a report, or when we want to write a story, we will ask the machine to do it. And people are already doing that. I know someone who's asking, these large language models to come up with research, a colleague to come up with a research question for them.
Yeah, so stop thinking at that point.
Yes, you see, that's
Or
where it
like,
is, because we think we use language to think. I don't know that much about linguistics and brain, how brain works, but I feel like there are words. I imagine words in my head when I'm thinking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's
I mean,
related to
it,
thinking and insight and curiosity. That's why it's just the not knowing what that would mean. For example, I will know what it means. If I don't know how to farm, I will go hungry for a while and maybe starve or maybe find food. But I don't know what will happen if I'm less skilled and less curious, less skilled in thinking and speaking and writing and less curious. That's just very scary.
yeah, I think I mean I do understand when people use it like for brainstorming like ideas, just to get inspiration maybe on stuff where like you need a you don't want a blank page and you wanna get started in somehow. But I think yeah, you're right, critical thinking and even communication, like even oral communication, I feel that I mean, I'm seeing the difference even with my brother. The new generation struggle communicating, even oral communication compared to my generation. And I think the reason is how they are communicating right now. Like he's texting his friend on whatever app is being used rather than, I don't know, calling them or just meet somewhere and talk, right? It's such a difference. And I think that can be seen, even when they're trying to do a presentation. They're just even students trying to do a presentation and stuff like that. They're definitely less used to do it. Or when I tell them do something together in class, they like if at first it's always super weird that they need to talk to each other. But it was so natural for me. And again, you're right. I mean, if you start losing those skills, if you start relying on AI to write any single thing, every single email, every single I'm not even talking papers, but if you start relying on them for everything, then you will lose those capacity. You would, and that is scary because again, what if something happened? That day you can do nothing,
Yes,
pretty much nothing.
humans have been
So
advancing in language and depth of thought for consistently for a very long time, since we started like taking care of our basic needs. We have successfully taken care of our basic needs, such as food and shelter. We have consistently expanded our knowledge and depths of thought and curiosity. And I think that's a little at risk right now, because that activity is reducing. When people don't write something that they were supposed to write, that activity is reducing, the mental activity that is related to language and thought. So I agree with you. If I can't find a shelter, if I don't have to skills to build a shelter for me, I will eventually find a cave or die. But some of us will find a cave and we'll go back to cave, and then we'll come out
yeah.
some point. But what about losing thought?
Yeah. I think yeah, well I think in the future we should call some expert in the field and get their opinion and thoughts on this. It's I'm sure there is research that focuses just on this, and I'm pretty sure that they are proving that we are definitely probably stop improving. like we have done in the past, just because
Every
of how
scary
much
time.
we rely. Yeah.
No,
But it
every time we talk
will
about
not be
anything.
surprising. It will not be surprising, right?
No.
Because we have been doing this for 30 years. So even though we are my 30, 40 years, depending on, but for a while, right? So even if I'm now relying to speed up the some of those processes with AI, I've still have done this for so long. But the
Yeah.
new generation, if they start using AI from the very beginning, it's like Russ was saying, like calculator, right? I still remember doing many calculations by hand in school. So I have that skill and I still practice it because I mean, I like math. One of the few people probably that does that, but I like math. But the new generation rely on calculator from the very beginning, then definitely don't have that skill. Or, you know what I'm saying? Like they don't develop their skill,
Yeah.
they don't practice their skill. So yeah, I agree with him.
Yes.
Well, that is always the moral of our episodes, I think, is here's where everything is awesome and how it could potentially ruin all of humanity. So I think that's a perfect place to end this
Wait,
episode for this week.
Russ,
Yeah.
just for a disclaimer, for the listener that listen to this one, we are not against AI, we are not against technology.
No, we're
We
not.
many times advocate in favor, but we also need to discuss sometimes the dark sides. So
Yeah,
yeah,
and every time,
just to say that I
whatever
love
topic we
technology.
have, it goes back to AI in the end, at the end of the episode. Because I
Yes,
go, what is
yes.
AI gonna do to our brain? That's it.
But I think that is part of where it comes from, because when it does take or steps into environments of like writing and thinking, that's been the stuff that all technology before has only been able to
Get so far, yeah.
subsidize our stuff. Like even the tractor or the plow, like we still needed to be the human thinking of how to do it. It was an inanimate object. And of course, that's, I know AI isn't, you know, animated, but it is replicating those elements that we thought were only human. And so that very quickly you're like, all right, when this thing starts to become closer and closer to human, now that becomes something that traces everywhere in there. And that gets to be scary, even if it doesn't turn into a dark side. But we're also in the beginning of it, and there aren't those rules or regulations, or we haven't figured it out. Just like cars. I mean, a lot of people had to sadly lose their lives while we were developing specific rules of cars that now today we would never develop a car without a seatbelt or, you know, specific safety features in there. So I think that's kind of maybe a bad metaphor for what we're at now, but we need to figure out where the guardrails are within AI so that we all function well without having to be at the mercy of AI in a point where if someone does one weird update, we now can't do surgeries or, you know, run machines in hospitals. And I think that's kind of where we're at. So, again, yeah, we love it. I think it can do a lot of really great things, and I think we're experiencing that, but it's just making sure that we're all cognizant of what we're walking into.
Thank you.
Perfect. All right, gentlemen, you all have a good week. We will see you next one. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to another episode of The Gateway, brought to you by Northern Illinois University, where your future is our focus. And please remember to love always the promise of tomorrow today.